everyone. This is Tom Fox, and I'd like to welcome you to this episode of Snell and Fox, Unfair and Unbiased. This is Tom Fox, and once again, I'm back with Roy Snell, the CEO of the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics, for another podcast. Roy, welcome.
Tom, it's good to see you again. And by the way, I have to disagree with you right away. You said we're unfair and unbiased. We're actually, I am horribly biased. I am unfair and unbalanced.
That's right, unbalanced. So I try not to be unbalanced, but I'm certainly not unbiased.
I might be both, actually.
We may be both. So we had a great discussion in our last podcast, but I wanted to see if I might bring it back down to something tangible, because I certainly get this question a lot, which is, how do I either get into the compliance profession, or more importantly, how do I get a job in the compliance profession?
Right. Well, it's a huge conflict of interest, but Joe Murphy, one of the greatest minds in our profession, has written a book on the subject. The problem is we sell it. It's not terribly expensive, but I am potentially conflicted. He talks about the profession in that light. How to get a job? I get this question a lot, and I'm going to answer it two different ways. One is the question of what kind of background do I have to have? And the other is I'm going to talk about how to literally go out and look. The first part of the question, which is what kind of background do you need? You know, we talked previously in a previous podcast about there are skilled people from many different professions who are successful here. There are a few compliance degrees out there, maybe a dozen of them. A couple of them are master's degrees. Some of them can be obtained online. They're not all over the country. They're not as prolific as the legal profession or audit or risk, but they're out there in some cases for people who are already in the workforce. That's not necessarily practical. I certainly would encourage people to go to conferences, any conference in the compliance field, to try and get a better feel for the profession. Again, pretty conflicted here, but we have a certification program that can help your resume get you into the shorter stack or the next stack, as well as the master's degree. Not maybe as well as, but like the master's degree would. I usually tell people to just market the living crud out of themselves. I think getting a job in this profession, any profession, is hard. You know, some people just stumble into the stuff all the time, but for a lot of us, we just have to work our tail off. It's like selling cars. It's like selling anything. You got to make people aware that you're out there. And I have four daughters in their 20s who are in the workplace, and they're not listening to me when I tell them that they should go hang out with a professional association that is closest to their field they want to be in. It's very disappointing to me. I understand why they don't understand it. I didn't understand it for my first 20 years. But I've watched people become a household name in certain professional associations, and it creates a lot of opportunities. But I want to really get at this question of finding the jobs. It's a little difficult to find the jobs right now because we acknowledge on many occasions, a really young profession. And it's complicated by the fact, if you go into Monster or Indeed.com, Indeed.com is a real good job site, not a lot of people know about. But when you type in compliance, you're going to get tens of thousands of hits. And it's going to be, not that they're bad jobs, they're just not the jobs you're in the corporate compliance world, but, you know, parking lot compliance officer, dog catcher compliance officer, they're not bad jobs, they're just not the jobs we're looking for. So I would search on things like corporate compliance officer. There are people actually now listing the certification that our organization has, the Certified Compliance and Ethics Professionals, CCEP. They're listing that in their job posting as preferred. If you want to sort through tens of thousands of of jobs for jobs that are relevant to you, search on the word compliance and CCEP. CCEP alone will get you a bunch of false positives or jobs that have CCEP in them, but really aren't compliant. You have to add the word compliance. I would go on to Twitter and type in compliance officer job. I just did it this morning. There's a ton of them on there. I would go into LinkedIn and type in compliance officer job, or I type in compliance officer and I go to the pull down menu and select jobs first and then hit search. We have a job posting on SCCE's job site called on the website's name is corporatecompliance.org. It's a little difficult to crack into the profession, some people feel. It's a little difficult to find these jobs, but I'll tell you this, that if you want to have a tough time cracking into a profession, crack into the legal profession. If you want to have a tough time cracking into a profession, try and crack into the audit profession, which has 40-year experience talent in there. And our profession is growing rapidly. Our organization, depending on what number you look at, is growing from 10 to 20% a year, which reflects a huge growth in this profession. It's hard, but there are far more opportunities in this profession than in many others because we have many new jobs being started right now, and we don't have a lot of veterans.
I would say besides the SCCE job posting site, for compliance jobs, the best site I'm aware of is Maurice Gilbert's site,
absolutely.
Corporate Compliance Insights. Maurice is also a professional search firm for compliance jobs, so he's a great resource as well. Let me go at it a different way, which is the two best pieces of advice I got when I was just breaking into this field were the following, and they came from, I think, a friend of ours, Francine McKenna. Used to be in Chicago, now is at the Wall Street Journal. She said to me, she gave me two pieces of advice. One was to take at least 6 months of effort, but really a year, if you want to move from not professions, but certainly within the legal profession, I was moving from contracting transactional work to compliance. Second was don't take your eye off the ball. If you want to do compliance, do compliance. Don't do like every other lawyer says, oh, I'm a lawyer, I can do anything, take any piece of work that comes in. Now, fortunately, in my case, I didn't have any work coming in, so it wasn't hard to not take my eye off the ball. But really, those were the two of the best pieces of advice I got because it kept me focused and it kept me engaged in a length of time that I might not have otherwise because a trusted professional had told me that's what it had taken her in her own journey. And she was in auditing and moved to auditing and compliance and some other topics. So it's going to take some time if you want to move. It's going to require you doing some of the things that you articulated, Roy, going to conferences, meeting people. But I have seen three or four people start coming to SCCE conferences, become engaged, submit a guest blog post, comment on other blog posts, and their names have become known within the profession, and those people have been able to get jobs in the compliance profession. It did take them some time, and I don't know how distracted they may or may not have been, but there are paths to doing this, and there are paths you can take. It's going to take some work, but I would simply say that the benefit at the end of the journey is much greater than the work you'll put into it.
I would really like to move on to another question, but we really need to follow up on a couple of things you just said that are very, very important. In the past, if you wanted to become a household name in your profession, you had to go to the professional association and battle 20, 30, 40-year vets to get in and get an opportunity. I don't think they all tried to be good old boys clubs, but it sometimes is just inevitable. Today, you made an important point. You can become a household name in any profession, anywhere in the world, from your desk, by having a blog, posting to blogs, commenting on Twitter, contributing questions and answers and links to websites and discussion groups. There are people right now in our profession that, if it had not been for the social media, would be relatively unknown. And frankly, they're some of the most well-known. And they didn't get anybody's permission. They didn't have to go through a committee. They didn't have to get selected. It is a phenomenal benefit of social media right now. And I would just suggest to people, particularly if you're breaking in relatively new, you don't need to opine. You don't need to tell everybody the answer. You can just be helpful. You could tell people, read a discussion thread. Search the internet for an article that's relevant, a website that's relevant, a blog post that's relevant, and post the link on the discussion thread saying, I see you all are talking about FCPA issues related to the UN. And here's an article on it. And you don't necessarily need to weigh in on the political and social and controversial issues of the day. You can be extremely helpful. And I think you had some good suggestions.
Well, let me take it down to a specific level. Last February at the SCCE Utility and Energy Conference in Houston, a woman who wanted to break into our field approached you about somehow becoming involved with the SCCE. It was her first conference, or maybe her second, and you suggested she write a blog post. Of course, she said, I have nothing to write about. You said, write about your experience here, which she did. And she followed that up with a second post. And then she was able to get a compliance job with a major U.S. corporation. She was at the Compliance and Ethics Institute in October, and she wrote a couple of more blog posts about her personal evolution in terms of what she was able to garner from the conferences. It was just her experience, yet it was valuable for someone like me to understand what a newbie needs to hear, what they need to have, whether it's a pat on the back, a shake of the hand, a direction, go talk to this person. The networking, and if we could point over here to Courtney, who I interviewed at the CEI, she went at it yet a different way, which was, we're a family, and compliance is a family, and many ways we help each other. There's really no trade secrets in compliance, and we all tend to try to move the ball forward by helping the newer people in the profession, much like Francine McKenna did with me.
I want to keep on this thread a little bit here. You talked a little bit about advice for writing. I think you were quoting my great advice to this individual about there is something for everybody.
Absolutely.
I'm going to comment on that, just say a couple things. I don't want to ask you to just embellish it and add to it, because you write a lot. You write exceedingly well, and we can help people learn to write. Anybody can write. And particularly now with blog posts being about 400 words, it's easier to write. A little hard in some ways because you've got to really break it down to one point. And sometimes people struggle with that. But it's easier than 3,000 words, I gotta believe. So here's the advice I give, and I'd like to hear what advice you give people. I tell them, stop thinking about what you think will sell, or what people will read, or what you think people want you to write about. Write about what you are passionate about. Write about what you care about. Write about what you know about. Let people read it or not based on their interest in that topic. What are your thoughts about advising, particularly people new to the profession?
People new to the profession, write from the heart. Just write exactly what you said. Write about what your passion is. And if you don't think you have something to say, I'm here to tell you, you're 110% wrong.
Yep.
The person I was referencing in that example, she literally wrote about her experience for attending a utilities and energy conference for the first time, and what SCCE had given her the opportunity to do. And the I teach a master class in FCPA compliance and ethics, and in that class, everyone can share something about a compliance example. They may not be a chief compliance officer, they may be moving into the compliance field, but everyone has got something's relevant. And probably the best example I can give you is I was ragging on Jay Rosen for a long time to contribute a blog post to me. And he finally sent me one, and it was ethics and compliance lessons he learned in the drop-off line at kindergarten. And, you know, it was absolutely from his heart. It was what he was passionate about, his daughters, and it was what he saw in terms of compliance and ethics, violations and compliance in the drop-off line at his daughter's kindergarten or their day school. I think it was before they even got to kindergarten. So you can write about lots of different things. Just write from the heart, but the key is to write.
Yeah. You've reminded me of a story I just have to share. Luckily, it's short because I can't think of how to tie it into anything. Hopefully, before I'm done, I will. But, you know, maybe it's this. You know, the compliance programs help things run more smoothly. And simply running smoothly gives people more confidence. And building confidence in the employees is very important, particularly in terms of trying to build an ethical culture. Silly little mistakes, even if they're not seemingly big to anyone else, can really create fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Which brings me to my first day of school ever. My mother and I got the wrong information about where to stand for the bus. The bus picked up the kids a half a block away and drove right by us. So I was driven to school and dropped off at the, never heard of it, referred to it as the drop-off line at kindergarten. And there was extra confusion in my life because the process didn't go smoothly, extra fear. And I turned around and looked at this mass of humanity emptying out of the buses and clogged up at the door. And I turned back to look at my mother, and she was gone. And it was too much. It was just too much chaos. Which also kind of ties into the first day in compliance. You know, there is always something to write about. I've talked to people who just got the job, and I've encouraged them to write. And they go, I have nothing. And I go, no, you don't. You have something incredibly valuable. You have something incredibly valuable to 20-year veterans of this profession. What is it like walking in the door for the first time and listening to all these people opine about what the job is? Those of us who've been here in this for 20 years can't remember what it's like in the beginning. In a lot of cases, it's very important for those of us who've been around to understand what it's like to be new here, particularly because you said it's an extremely important part of our profession and a great feature that they're very generous. One other last point on the education from my perspective, anything from you, let's keep going if you want, but the writing, if you've only been in the job a couple of years, again, people tell me I can't write, and I said, no, you can write. You have worked on some specific project, drilled down into the weeds and implemented something, either education or auditing or investigation, that you can talk about the process you just went through that'll be helpful to all the people about to start the process, and they'll think of four steps that they would not have thought of until maybe too late because you put them in as you went and learned. So I don't care where you're at in the process. There's something you can offer. You got to be a little more careful if you're in the beginning part, but it's still possible.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things that struck me at the most recent Compliance and Ethics Institute was the number of foreign compliance officers who were in attendance and gave presentations. And it was not so much their thirst for knowledge around compliance, because that was great, but it was their increasing level of sophistication and what they were educating me on. So what they were bringing to the table. So people from Brazil, from Colombia, from Mexico, from a wide variety of Latin American countries that I spoke with, in Europe, Saudi Arabia, from United Arab Emirates. And as their programs mature, it's back to Hegel, and it's thesis, antithesis, synthesis. And the more we can synthesize what other people are doing, because they communicate that with us. And that is the beauty of social media. It allows someone in any part of the world sitting in front of their computer to give us information that we can utilize. And with the number of forums where you can post, certainly including the SCCE blog, but my blog, and generally anybody that has a blog will take a guest post. We'd love to hear it, and it moves the ball forward.
Yeah. I'd like to ask you in a second here, Tom, about beginning and folks in the field of compliance and experts using social media to stay informed. But I want to comment before I ask you that is compliance can be kind of a grind. And you mentioned that we learn a lot from people from other countries. It also happened to me. I spent the first 10 years of my compliance thing in a single industry, and then got far more active in all 55 industries. And in the last 5 years, many, many, many countries, listening, talking to people. And it's made it very interesting. And hanging, I get people every once in a while, they just want to go hang out with people in their own industry. And that's helpful to a degree, particularly if you're just going to talk about the rule of law. But there's a lot of legal conferences that you can go to and learn about the legal or the rule of law in one specific industry. I would encourage compliance professionals to use the limited time they have for travel and education in their profession to hang with compliance professionals of all industries, and frankly, as you mentioned, all countries, because there is expertise in certain industries. Financial services is phenomenally talented at data tracking and looking at emails, and they have skills that the investment advisor, in particular, broker-dealer, sure. Just unbelievable skill sets in that specific area. On the other hand, they would all benefit by hanging out with compliance professionals who implement all seven elements of a compliance program. Other countries, I mean, any country in the European Union is going to be far more experienced at and have more empathy in the area of privacy and security than most other parts of the world. So your life can be a grind in compliance. It can be kind of tough. Getting together with your peers is a great idea. And getting together in forums where there are all different kinds of people and all different kinds of compliance jobs and all different kinds of industries and all different kinds of countries, to me, is far more interesting. Do we have some more time for social media?
Sure.
Okay. I don't know this for a fact, but I would bet $12 that you are one of the most voracious,
prolific
readers of compliance news, and you don't probably just get it through one forum. How would you advise people who don't use social media or the internet quite enough to find out compliance news to where are the best places to go?
So there's a number of blogs that I read every day. They are the FCPA Professor, the FCPA blog, the SCCE blog, the Global Anti-Corruption blog, Mike Volkoff's blog, Matt Ellis at FCPA Americas. When he posts, that means you need to post more blogs, Matt Ellis. And I think that's probably...
What about Wall Street Journal?
Wall Street Journal, absolutely. Corruption Currents. Those guys are great on the news. You're right. I'm a voracious reader. I always have been, and I love reading it. I love keeping up with everything. LinkedIn is a great resource, particularly now that you can post articles on LinkedIn. It's absolutely incredibly useful. Large number of commentators, Compliance Week. A large number of commentators and friends send me articles, so we exchange articles back and forth. at my age, I still love a hard copy magazine. So for those organizations that put out magazines, I love you. I subscribe to you.
I am the same way.
So magazines are great. And also you can read longer form articles, which is equally important. One of the things I enjoy about writing for you guys is I get to write 3,000 words. And I'm constrained in many other forums for shorter articles that are articles. So a wide variety of sources. They're all available at, you know, little or no cost. And the information is out there. Law firms put out client alerts, recognize they're from law firms, and, you know, they may have their own spin. Nevertheless, they're important sources of the law. When the DOJ has an enforcement action, they have a press release. It's widely commented on by people like myself, by the FCPA professor, by the FCPA blog, Mike Volkoff, and others. So we all have our different spins on them, recognize them for what they are, our own biases, and I'm happy to acknowledge mine. So there's a wide variety of sources out there that anyone can really draw from. But getting back to your point, there's a wide variety of sources you can submit to as well. And whether it can even be Twitter, do not discount Twitter as an incredibly powerful tool, not only learning, getting information, but also getting your name out there, because it was Twitter that put me on the map. And you don't have to have any new content. You can retweet the content of the SCCE. You can retweet the content of a Mike Volkoff. You can retweet the content of, you name the person, they're going to acknowledge your tweets, and you will be able to at least contact that person and develop a relationship. So the tools of social media allow a person who is invalided sitting in their office in Houston, Texas, to create a worldwide compliance practice in a way that was unthinkable 20 years ago.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I've talked about Twitter as actually being a better search engine than Google in a way, because you can do word searches in Twitter and not only pull up articles, but you have pulling up articles that have been found and filtered by professionals in the field, as opposed to just any articles.
That's excellent.
It is extremely powerful search engine for people who want to get information that has been read by someone and deemed important enough to mention. When I search on Google, I'm getting stuff that just hasn't been vetted really at all.
This past August, the Harvard Business Review had an article about how companies are using Twitter. And that was one of the points they raised, that because of the number of retweets, it can show that a content has been vetted by others. And companies have two types of employees, generally the ones who can aggregate the Twitter content, and then there's generally a different group of employees who can then employ or use that inside of a corporation. But I found it fascinating that the academic research is now moving to study that.
How much time do we have?
Oh, we can keep going.
I have one more thing I want to talk about.
Then let's go.
Related to this. I post, as you mentioned, on LinkedIn articles, and I get some comments.
Sure.
And on occasion, I get, I think they call them trolls. It's not very often, but just people who really don't know the subject. They're just out to beat people in the head and complain about something. I don't know. It's not very often. I don't really care. I don't, if it's really crazy, I don't engage them. The reader can discern whether or not they've made a point that is of value. I don't delete any of them. I had one guy post something that was basically a rambling set of characters that looked like somebody sat on his keyboard, so I deleted that. It made no sense. But I will not delete them, and if they're at any attempt at all at unreasonable disagreement even, but on subject. You
unfair
know.
And unbiased?
Unfair and unbalanced. Unbalanced. Yeah, it can be all of that. I will try and respond. I prefer to respond. I wish people would comment more on not just mine, but any of the blog posts on any of the websites. This is a remarkable opportunity for us to learn and grow as a profession. These 400 to 800 word blog posts don't often cover it completely. We leave out something that, frankly, a lot of times somebody points out and I just immediately agree with. Yeah, I didn't word that right. You're correct. Or I didn't think of that, but you're right. Or on occasion, I'm sorry, I disagree, and let me try and make it more clear. The ability to banter after someone has made a fairly reasonable effort to make a point and cover a subject is so much more profoundly helpful than the print of yesteryear, which, by the way, I still prefer in books and like you. I'm going to go to my grave enjoying carrying on my old school stuff. Do you have any experiences or thoughts with commenting either on your posts or comments you made on other people's posts?
Well, much like yourself, I've experienced very, very little of the trolling. I just ignore it. I hope and wish people would comment more. I have actually found LinkedIn to be a much more useful tool for obtaining comments. And I'm not quite sure why, but it's very valuable to me because, to your point, I don't think of everything, and I certainly don't articulate everything when I write about a subject. So many of the comments cause me to rethink and think in different ways. And the best example I can give you is I wrote a blog post on the anniversary of Custer's last stand about how Custer had incorrectly assessed the risk. And I used it as an entree into discussion of risk assessment. And a military historian wrote me, and he wrote about using risk as a positive to assess the risk of your enemy to form the basis for your plan of attack. And I first thought, what an idiot. He missed completely the point of my blog post. And I thought, well, wait a minute. You know, there's something to that. And I happened to be reading a book by Norman Marx, his latest work, whose name has escaped me of the text. But the first chapter was about using risk assessments to be more aggressive in business. And I thought, you know, what a brilliant insight from this military historian that I had completely missed. And Marx put it together for me. So I wrote a blog post about that, using risk assessment to help you be more aggressive in business and how you can utilize the tools available to you in compliance to maybe think about not being defensive, but being more proactive.
Another thought for those folks that we've been talking so much about during this podcast is some people worry about posting a blog post for fear of being criticized. And like you, there are just very few trolls in our world, and they can be ignored. And the reader is going to see them for who they are. And if they have absolutely no point other than some horrible rant, let it go. If you feel like addressing, try and addressing it. If they're truly an aggressive individual that really has no desire but to argue, I probably wouldn't start to engage them if you think that's kind of the person. But you're just not going to get much of that. So don't ever let it be something that dissuades you from posting. And you can always hide it if it's truly inappropriate. On LinkedIn, you can hide the comment. Now, they may come back and these sorts of things. I have 50 posts. I don't remember, 40, 50 posts. I've just, on maybe one instance, had somebody give me the business. I'll tell you another thing. We have a thing called FCCENet, where you can start discussions and make comments and that sort of thing. And you have to go out of your way to know that FCCENet, which is set up for compliance professionals, it's like LinkedIn but disconnected. Its biggest advantage is you can post documents that everybody can access, and it's more difficult, if not impossible, on LinkedIn. One of the things about FCCENet is it is an unbelievable filter to random trolls. They have to go set up a profile and want to be involved in our profession. LinkedIn, it's everyone, Katie barred the door.
Right.
So I would not ever worry about it. In fact, I would embrace it. And I wish more people would comment more on my posts. I get help making sure that I see them, certainly on our SCCE blog, Stephanie watches for those and sends me an email. If I get a comment, I jump right in. I respond to every one of them. Again, a couple of times in a couple of years, I haven't responded because they were just so off the wall. And the other thing is, you know, like you said, we correct our statements. We make better points. We drill down a little bit. And it also gives us ideas for our next blog post. It's a great way to spur other people on. These comments are a great way to spur other people on to share more. It's amazing. It's stunning. I've been in business way too long. I almost said how long, and I'm not going to do that. But when I started out, it was brick and mortar, paper.
Yep.
The only way you could communicate with the people in your field was to pack a bag and get on a plane or drive downtown. And now if the day gets a little long and you need something else to do, it's a great way to be productive, but, you know, just pull up something, you know, and try and engage.
Absolutely agreed. Unfortunately, we're at the end of our time again. So on that note, I'd like to thank everyone for listening, and we look forward to continuing the conversation.
Thanks, Tom.